Now, our second part of our Ahmed and Partner symposium, we have another, I think, five very interesting talks. Our first presenter is from Germany. It's Frank Ebert. He is with the University of Bonn in Germany. He's a very, very great example of being involved in lots of different networks, which where the networks also connect. He's leading or co-leading parts of Max Höher, the European program, but he's also a co-leader of ACMAP Wied, together with me and with Herr Marke, and he also leads within ACMAP Wied an uncertainty activity as well. So he's very well connected and being a big player in many of these very important activities. Frank will talk about scaling, which sort of gets us to the next level. We talked a lot about what's happened at points and maybe along a transect. Now we try to see what's happened and how we actually get from these different points to region and maybe globe. Frank.
Thanks, Anthold, and thanks everybody for coming back after the break. It's always a risk that people disappear, but it's good to see that some of you are back. The topic is on scaling up crop models. And before I go into some of the content, I want to acknowledge the contribution of a number of people to this. This is not work that is done by myself. There are many people involved. And mainly these people come from two projects, ACMAP and Max Höher. You have heard already about these two efforts. Originally, these were two separate groups. But then once we've reached another scale of this activity, we merged them, and they are now going together in one team. The outline of my presentation is shown here. I will give you first some background information of how we approach that issue of scaling up crop models. And then I will show you some results of how we have started to quantify errors or uncertainty that can be related or should be related to the scaling up of crop models. And at the end, I will say a few words about the linking of the global and regional assessment and some of the information and insights that we got from this scaling work. When we talk about scaling up of crop models, we have to remember that we work with models that have been typically developed for field scale application. However, most of the questions we want to address, particularly related to climate change, but also to food security, etc., occur at the higher level of the organization, country level, regional level, continental level, global level. And we see many applications where people use crop models originally developed for field scale application at these higher levels of the organization. But there are several things to consider if you want to take these models higher up. And that's the topic of the work of this group that I have just introduced to you. It has been for several years. I will not discuss to which extent it is meaningful to use crop models at these higher levels of organization. There are some good reasons to think about alternative approaches, statistical approaches. That's not the topic here. We know that there's some advantage of using crop models because they are able to reproduce or to consider climate variability, extreme events, those sort of things are a bit more difficult to get with statistical models. When we want to scale up these crop models, and in the image I show you here, I distinguish between the model itself and their input data going into the model and their output data going out of the model, and all these different parts of the simplified scheme are prone to error, prone to uncertainty. You can have error, you can make an error by aggregating the input data, and we have different types of input data that you see written on the screen. We have genetic characteristics that may change as we move up the scale, or we may have to treat them. Model structure and parameters, something to be aware of, whether it should or whether it, if it change, how should it change. And there's some post-processing of data sometimes involved that may also prone to uncertainty. We have when we apply a model, which is typically developed at a very local scale, and that's an image of a sun-induced fluorescence measurement, of a transect in the south of France, showing you the heterogeneity of some of the growth characteristics that you can have find in the field, and that we also model. And in order to have some information or some information about the responsiveness of such a transect to a climate change signal, for instance, you want to know how you scale up your crop model. And in order to do that, you basically think of manipulating either the input data and or the model parameters and or the model structure. These are sort of the three categories you could invent or come up with in order to sort of get some systematics in your scaling up activities. There are a number of scaling methods that derive from this, and I will not describe them here. I've described them several times in the ACMIP community, and you can also read this. It has been published. I will not spend time on this. Rather than, I want to focus on the two most common methodologies that you find in the literature. And one refers to what we call sampling, that you take a region. In this case, we have the global extent, and you try to sample this spatial extent that you want to model for, in order to get as much as variability that you expect to happen in that region or at this global scale. There are different ways of sampling. I'm not going into this in this presentation. Just as an introduction here, there is that method of sampling, and you see many applications where this method has been used. And in the course of this session, you have also already heard results from this application. Another method that's almost used in parallel, and there's sometimes difficult to understand why a group chooses the one or the other method, is referred to aggregation. I see that I've made a typo here, aggregation. And that's in the ACMIP community, the AgGrid group uses that approach, where you have already treated your input data and aggregated them to a larger spatial extent, in this case a grid cell of 50 by 50 kilometers. And that's in that way already a distinction to the first method of the sampling. Now, the sampling typically has the advantage that you have a very high resolution, but you have a very poor, quite often a poor coverage of the spatial area for which you want to model. In contrast to that, the second method, you typically have a low resolution. 50 by 50 kilometers is all relative, but is relatively low. But you have a good coverage. In this case, you have a full coverage. This example that I show you here for a global application of the crop models. The objectives of some of the activities that we have done could be perhaps summarized with these three bullet points. First, to quantify model error and uncertainty due to upscaling is a very general objective. But eventually, we want to be able to learn from this and to generalize the insights that we get from this in order to apply them for impact assessment studies at global but also at regional scale. In order to get there, we had to make many steps to learn how big these errors can be and how we can generalize in order to apply them to impact assessment studies. And I'm coming back to my scheme that I've showed you before. We had to understand the error that we make by scaling up, for instance, input data. And here we ask the question, does it make a difference whether we manipulate climate data as compared to soil data, as compared to management data? Is it the same or different across crops? Those sort of things we had to understand. With respect to the models, we had to know or wanted to know, are there differences among the models with respect to the scaling error, or do they behave all the same? Production situation is a big topic when it comes to crop modeling. We're not only talking about potential yield, but also water-limited, nitrogen-limited yields. And the question was also here, are there differences with respect to the production situations? And with respect to the impact variables, there was also to clarify, are the errors that we make with respect to the scaling up are the same for yield as for other impact variables, for instance, ET or soil carbon, etc. So we built up the whole study systematically in order to get some grip on those sort of questions. And I will only be able, in the course of this talk here, to show you some results with respect to the aggregation of climate data, some model differences. We have also started now to look into the aggregation of soil management data, but this is work in progress, and I will not have the time, much time to go into this here. We choose a region in order to study this systematically for which we had very good data available. High-resolution climate data were available, soil data were available, and that was a good, like, virtual experiment that we could set up for these questions that I just raised. It's a region in Germany, North Rhine-Westphalia, 34,000 square kilometers large, and we tested basically these two methods. The aggregation, and here you see a simplified image of the steps of aggregation that we looked at, and also the sampling method. This is an image of the aggregation of the input data that we have produced in order to understand the error that comes with such aggregation. And what you see here refers to the minimum temperature, the maximum temperature, precipitation, and radiation. And you already see that by aggregating data, you lose some of the information. It's not difficult to which screen I should point. Maybe I change from slide to slide. But you can see that some of the information here, Tmax, the values, the lower values of Tmax disappear as you aggregate. Now the question is, how much impact does that have on the simulations? If you run a crop model at a grid size of 100 by 100 kilometer or 50 by 50, is that information loss relevant or not? Those sort of questions we try to understand. This is slide, or this figure shows you how the variance, the spatial variance, maybe I go here now for a change, the spatial variance changes with the aggregation in different ways depending on the input variable you're looking at. Now, that sort of information could be interesting eventually if you want to make the step towards the generalization of such of some of the crop model responses. I come back to that later. Here you already see some simulations from the models that we have used in this exercise. And we were lucky to get at least 12 groups involved in this exercise, so that really gave us a good understanding of how different or similar crop models can respond to those sort of things. And what you see here is the ensemble mean of the 12 models, that's the white line here, as compared to the observed yields in the region, that's the white line down here, and the shades around are the 25 to 75 percentile ranges, in blue for the observed and in gray for the individual models. So you see behind these different up and down lines with the gray shades are the 12 individual models, and you already get some impression how broad the models respond if they are applied to that region. But in general, the ensemble mean reproduces quite well the temporal variability that we find in the region. Not surprisingly, the yields are higher because this refers to potential yield. If you repeat the simulations for water-limited and for nitrogen-limited yield, the lines get closer together. But I'm not sure this here in the course of that talk. That is an image of the aggregation of the model ensemble showing you the spatial pattern that is simulated by the 12 models. These spatial patterns vary depending on the individual model. This is the ensemble mean. And here you see the observed yields. And there is some of that pattern that we observe is also reproduced by the ensemble mean. So that gave us some confidence that we are in the right order of magnitude when it comes to the patterns and space and time that are observed in that region. So now, a first step to understand the error that we make when we aggregate. And what you see here is a change in the resolution, the steps that we have looked at. And here you see the relative error that we make by aggregating the input data. And this line here, the thick blue line, is the ensemble mean. And it reads like that with increasing aggregation, the error that you make is relatively small. only 3%. That's something that you can almost ignore. So the message would be here, if you have a model, if you have an ensemble available and you run this for this region at a 50 or 100 kilometer grid, your error will be 3%, slightly above that, relatively low. But the other information in that graph is that the differences between the models, among the models, can be substantial. Quite large differences. Some models give an error of 12% and more. And that's something to consider if you work with individual models for such applications. But on the other hand, the response of the models when it comes to the effect of aggregation is also very much the same. You don't find a model that goes the other way. Would also be surprising if it does it. We have repeated that for other crop, for another crop, silage maize, and for different output variables. I'm not going into this, just the information here that the responses can differ depending on the crop, and they can also differ slightly depending on the impact variable you look at, which makes it somewhat more complicated if you want to generalize eventually. But this is not surprising because there are different formalisms, equations behind just the simulation of ET, whereas if you look at the yield, it's a much more complex trait than ET, for instance. So there's no surprise in such outcomes here as well. Towards generalization, we try to understand, is there anything that explains that data aggregation error? That's the abbreviation here, data aggregation error. And that's actually quite a nice relationship that we found, that with increasing spatial heterogeneity of the yield that we simulated, the data aggregation error becomes larger. So that's the first step towards generalization. The next step would be if we find a proxy that explains us the increase in spatial heterogeneity that we can use by not having to go always through the simulation exercise in order to estimate that spatial aggregation error. That's something that we're working on presently. We have expanded that study, not only looking into North Rhine-Westphalia, this was this part here, but also the whole of Germany, same picture here. If we run for the whole of Germany, 200,000 grid cells, and aggregate these stepwise, we get a similar results. This is just a comparison of the observed and the simulated. I think this is 50 by 50 kilometer grid. This is the temporal, the spatial pattern, the temporal variability, the one-to-one line. But this is the graph I want to point your attention to, and it compares the simulated yield at the 1 by 1 kilometer with the simulated yield at different levels of aggregation. And you see there's almost a perfect one-to-one match. The message again here, the error that we make when it comes to the bias is relatively small for the aggregation. That's something we did not expect, actually. It was quite a surprise to us. But there's another thing, another information in this aggregation that we are interested in when it comes to impact assessment. We are not only interested in the bias, we are also interested in the loss of variability within a region. And what you see here is the delta of the individual aggregations simulated for 10 by 10, 25 by 25, etc., compared to the 1 by 1 kilometer. So you see the deviations, the delta, or the differences of the different aggregation levels to the high-resolution simulation. And you see, as you increase your aggregation, the error that you make becomes larger, and this can also be measured. Here is the average deviation, the bias, hardly any bias, but this is the variability in the difference, and that's the spatial pattern of that. And if we try to understand what determines the pattern, already a look at an elevation map shows you that there is apparently some link to elevation when it comes to these patterns. And we made a step further in order to measure that, and I will explain this to you in the next slide. This slide should inform you that by understanding these differences, you will be able eventually to give the resolution that you need in order to be below a certain error that you would like to achieve. So if you say, I would like to be below an error of 200 kilograms per hectare per year, then you would need resolutions as it is given here in their spatial allocation. So there will be areas that need a very high resolution and there will be areas where you get away with a low resolution. If you change your error, then this picture will look differently. We have then tried to understand, is there any way of estimating the error from some of the information that we have about the region without going through the process of modeling yields? And here you see a semivariogram of the elevation for three different grid cells. These are the three grid cells. These are the semivariograms. And actually, when we linked one of the parameters of the semivariogram against the error in the simulation, we get a very good relationship. That means that we can use that information to predict our error when we want to upscale the model, and that's very helpful. If we can generalize that further across other regions, that's a very powerful mean for us in order to estimate this error. Sampling error, or the error when it comes to the sampling, a few slides here. This is again the time period that we looked at for the different models, and you see here for different numbers of sampling points in a region how these the yield simulations can differ. Very little difference, also a surprise to us. And when we plot that differently, you see also the error, the bias is relatively small, even for a small number of 10 points in the region, still quite pretty much the same as the very high resolution. But the variability changes here as well. We can use such information also, and that's quite helpful if you want to stay within the method of sampling, in order to determine the number of points that we need, and this goes higher up here, in order to stay below a certain error. And that's also quite helpful. What we have not done, what we're also trying to do, is to generalize this, to which extent we can generalize such relationships across regions. We know that this relationship is different depending on the model, but there may be some ways to generalize it across regions for individual models. Eventually, we asked us the question, what's better, aggregation, sampling? Is it the right question to ask? And what you see here is one grid cell out of that region, and this is the yield simulation over a period of time for the 50 by 50 kilometer grid, aggregating the climate data. And this would be the simulations for all the 2,500 points in the region. And you can see how large the spread is. So you can see by picking the wrong point in the region, you can be quite far off as compared to the average. But if you choose a point through a good guided sampling, you may be relatively close to what the 50 by 50 kilometer grid gives you. Still, in your amplitudes, you may still get more variability than the aggregate. These are the delta values that you get for the region, 50 by 50, 2,500 points, and these are the delta values. I'm coming to my last slide. Cynthia has already introduced the global regional assessment, coordinated global regional assessment, and one issue here is to which extent can we and want to link the information from the local model application to a gridded application that goes that we apply to a region or the continent. And there are some issues to think about, and one aspect of linking that could be to somehow retain the information or use the information that we have from the high resolution in terms of the spatial, in terms of the geostatistical characteristics, in order to qualify and improve the estimates of the global or the gridded crop models. But that is also some work that we're just starting up with. Summarizing here, there is some progress in understanding the error due to the scaling. We have done that. We have some insights now for selected methods, for different input types. I've mainly shown you data results on weather. The errors are relatively small when it comes to the bias. It's different when it comes to variability. Effects are larger for soil. We already see that, and they are larger for management factors. There are some differences between crops that need to be considered, and also between the impact variables. When it comes to the generalization, we need to move further when it comes to the generalization across regions, crops, and impact variables. And geostatistics, and I've given you some examples, may give you a good handle on this. Link to impact assessments here, global regional linkage, that's a very practical application. And in order to do that properly, we would need to develop the relevant scaling protocols. with that, I want to thank you.
Oh.
I also want to mention this conference. There will be more presentations on this one.
Thanks, Frank. Is there a question? Claudio.
As for the stress, we have looked into this specifically and looked into heat stress and drought stress. I didn't show the results. It was already too much time that I used for this. Interestingly, there's also no effect really on the stress, on the heat stress, when it comes to the bias. When it comes to the variability, change in variability with aggregation, for instance, then you see also an effect. In the area that I've shown here for Germany, the heat stress is relatively unimportant. There are some heat stress effects, 10%, 15%, in some years more, but as compared to the drought stress is much more important. But also here, if you just look at the stress index, the drought stress index, the error that you make when aggregating is relatively small when it comes to the bias. That was also a surprise to us, at least for the model that we looked at. Rotations we haven't done yet, and the third question was, soil. Yeah, we are doing the soil, and the effects for manipulating soil data as you aggregate are larger. We already see that. They're larger than for climate data. We had a longer discussion on this. So you can't really aggregate soil information. So that's a slightly different procedure. It's basically a sampling in the aggregation because you sample the most dominant soil in the region. That's what we did, that's what we tested, and there are more severe effects that we should be aware of. And the same applies to the management. Yeah.
Thanks, Frank. I think we need to move on.
Yeah. Thank you.